TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness.
Billionaires are pillaging America. How to fight back? Chris Hedges interviews Les Leopold, co-founder of the Labor Institute. Les Leopold is the author of Wall Street's War on Workers, How Mass Layoffs and Greed Are Destroying the Working Class, and What to Do About It, published on February 22, 2024. Chris Hedges interviewed Leopold in April 2024 on the Real News Network. Hedges is an American journalist, author, commentator, and Presbyterian minister. Here he is.
The country's major corporations, seeking to crush union organization, have filed legal papers to shut down the National Labor Relations Board, or NLRB, the federal agency that enforces labor rights and oversees unionization efforts. Elon Musk, SpaceX, as well as Amazon, Starbucks, and Trader Joe's have targeted the NLRB after it accused Amazon, Starbucks, and Trader Joe's of breaking the law in battling against unionization, as well as accusing SpaceX of illegally firing 8 workers for criticizing Elon Musk. The attempt to get the federal courts to overturn the 89-year-old National Labor Relations Act, which has governed labor relations since Franklin Roosevelt was president, is one more assault in the war against workers by corporations and Wall Street. Laws and regulations put in place by the New Deal have been steadily dismantled. The NLRB, for example, has already been rendered largely toothless. It is unable to fine corporations for breaking the law, including when corporations fire workers who are attempting to organize. If NLRB judges are declared unconstitutional, the goal of the legal challenge, it would halt judges from hearing hundreds of cases brought against corporations for violating labor laws. This latest attack on workers is part of a broader, decades-long assault that includes the mass layoffs of workers and costly stock buybacks to enrich shareholders at workers' expense. This assault has not only caused financial distress among the working class, it has not only seen wealth funneled upwards into the hands of the billionaire class, but has had negative repercussions for our society and our democracy. The Democratic Party's abject betrayal of the working class, especially in rural America, lies at the heart of the rise of a demagogue like Donald Trump. Rather than halt this corporate pillage, the victims of this assault are demonized as ignorant, racist bigots, those Hillary Clinton called deplorables. They are written off as a lost cause politically. The statistics, however, point to a strong correlation between the decline of the Democratic Party and mass layoffs, along with onerous trade agreements that ship manufacturing jobs to Mexico and China. The claim by many Democrats and pundits, such as New York Times columnist Paul Krugman, that there is a massive, reactionary, working-class, populist base in America is a fiction. Joining me to discuss the war on workers and how it imperils what is left of our anemic democracy is Les Leopold, who co-founded the Labor Institute and is the author of Wall Street's War on Workers, How Mass Layoffs and Greed Are Destroying the Working Class and What to Do About It. So your book, I think, makes a very convincing case that the defection of the white working class in particular, which is largely often rural, is caused by this economic distress. And you have lots of data and statistics to back it up. But I want to begin, as you do in the introduction, you lay out the cost, the emotional cost to workers who lose their jobs.
Well, I saw this in my own family. My father was a factory worker. And when he was laid off through a mass layoff, it was traumatic. He felt terrible about himself. We were fortunate that my mother had a full-time job. So, you know, we didn't completely crash economically, but he just felt pretty worthless. another fortunate thing was this happened to be during the recessions of the early 1960s. And when the economy picked up, he got a job and he basically was able to hold it for the rest of his career. Then it was during recessions, that's when you'd see mass layoffs. Corporate CEOs were embarrassed to do mass layoffs. They thought it was a sign of their own failure. Now it's a sign of financial prowess. Good times, bad times, it doesn't matter. So you're seeing people go from one mass layoff to the next mass layoff. If a democratic country and its economy can't produce a modicum of stable employment, you're in trouble. And the people start losing faith in the system all around them. It's no accident that the opioid epidemic grew up in this environment. It's no accident that people started to abandon the Democratic Party. They just feel let down and they don't know where to turn. And frankly, you know, where do we tell them to turn? I see a few politicians who are brave enough to take on Wall Street, and they're doing well, like Sherrod Brown in Ohio. But most people just duck. You know, they want to talk about something else, where they talk about jobs in the future. That's the other thing I'm finding difficult to handle. I'm all for the infrastructure bills. I'm all for the CHIPS programs, all these things that create jobs in the future. But what is it going to do for the person that's laid off now? We had a plant go down in Olean, New York. That's on the southern tier, right above Pennsylvania. Very rural, once very industrial. So a plant goes down there, and in a few years, a battery factory is opened up in Buffalo, 3, 4, 5 hours away. I mean, it doesn't do anything for you. You're being told, move. Take your family, your life, and just rip it up and move. Anyway, this kind of pressure has been studiously ignored. So that was one finding of our book is, as you've explained it very well, we found there was a high correlation, causal correlation between the rise of mass layoffs in the rural, especially in the rural counties in the blue wall states, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, and the decline of the Democratic Party going back to 1996, not just during the Trump election. And the second thing we found that you mentioned was that the white working class, especially in these rural areas, are not becoming more illiberal. They are not a basket full of deplorables. Yes, there's some people like that. We estimate nationally, maybe max 3% would fit into Hillary's basket full of deplorables. I'm gonna just give you one statistic that a couple that just blew my mind. When asked 20 years ago whether a gay or lesbian couple should be able to adopt children, the white working class, on average, only about 38% said they approved of that. Now it's 76%. Another one, how about legalization? This is an important one, because this is the one you would think would be completely hated by the people, quote unquote, left behind. Do you approve of granting citizenship to illegal immigrants who've been here 3 years, no felonies, and have been paying their taxes? Well, 15 years ago, only about 32% agreed with that statement. Now it's 61.6%. Almost two-thirds now say, yes, we believe that there should be a path to legalization for undocumented workers. To me, that was phenomenal when I saw that. President Obama said, you know, there's a certain mental gymnastics that goes on here to rationalize this away. You say, yeah, we know that they've been left behind economically. A, there's nothing we can do about it because it's the forces of trade, it's the globalization and technology. And besides, it's their fault that they're clinging to guns and religion. We're not making them do that. Well, it turns out they're, you know, we saw no evidence that people are getting more religious. We saw no evidence that they're clinging to their guns. They're not more homophobic. They're not more racist. They're getting more liberal, but they're angry. And you said that very well. They're disgusted that no one is reaching out for them to them, not just to pat them on the back or wear a hoodie and make them feel good like they look, you know, we look the same. No, people that will actually intervene and stop mass layoffs. That's what has to happen. Direct intervention to stop mass layoffs and the tricks that Wall Street plays to promote them. Leverage buyouts, stock buybacks.
We should just be clear, as you make clear in your book, that the financial structures have changed with the rise of corporate raiders. We now politely call them private equity firms. And I did a good interview with the Pulitzer Prize winning financial or business reporter Gretchen Morgenson on her book on private equity. So the model changes where a private equity firm comes in and harvests a corporation to sell off its assets, in essence, to destroy it. They're not trying to sustain it. And that has fueled, we'll go back to certainly the Clinton would, well, go back to Reagan probably, but that has over the last few decades seen wave after wave of mass layoffs. I wrote a book called America, the Farewell Tour and wrote a chapter out of Anderson, Indiana. That's where GM used to make its cars, good union paying jobs, a middle class city. They literally packed up the equipment and moved it to Monterrey, Mexico, where they pay workers $3 an hour. And the city has fallen into a death spiral with all of the attendant problems that you point out, opioid addictions, suicides, very high. And yet the Democratic Party just utterly fails to address this issue. You write, Joe Biden, Chuck Schumer, and Bernie Sanders had golden opportunities during the pandemic to stop two significant mass layoffs, one in Morgantown, West Virginia, the other, as you mentioned, in Olean, New York. The failure to act contrasts sharply with Trump's strikingly symbolic and partially successful effort to prevent the Carrier Global Corporation from moving jobs from its Indiana facility to Mexico in 2017. And I think this is an issue that many people who dislike Trump don't pick up on, although, of course, he's a con artist. But he does speak to this pain directly in a way that no other Democratic politician does, with maybe the exception of Bernie Sanders and Sherrod Brown, of course.
Well, look, that's an excellent point. First of all, it was a very self-conscious effort on the part of the Democrats and the Republicans from Reagan on to rip up the New Deal controls, get rid of the guardrails. Just like you talked about the NLRB, that's another one they're now trying to get rid of. But basically, this, these corporate raiders, the harvesters, that just wasn't going on before the deregulation. That was frowned upon. That was easily stopped. SEC would walk in and say, no, you can't do that.
Well, I just want to interrupt you. As you point out in your book, stock buybacks, it used to be illegal.
It was basically so controlled that no more than 2% of corporate profits could go to stock buybacks. Now we're talking close to 70% of all corporate profits in society. And some companies, not just a handful, but hundreds and hundreds, spend more than 100% of their profits on stock buybacks. They're basically taking their money and giving it to the largest stock owners. They're not investors. These are stock sellers. And these are the hedge funds and other large institutions that swoop in, demand a stock buyback. Actually, that's why Carrier was moving to Mexico, not to keep up with the competition, but there were its parent company, United Technologies, had a bunch of hedge funds took a position in that company and said, we want a $6 billion stock buyback. So they figured, we can save $60 million by moving our most profitable division to Mexico. And Trump did intervene. The story of it's so painful to bring this one up, but I connected with the president of the union at the Morgantown, West Virginia facility. It's Mylan Pharmaceuticals. And, there's a whole seedy history there with Joe Manchin's daughter, and she got like $100 million.
Right. They produce EpiPens for $10 and then sell them for hundreds of dollars. Right.
But there's a whole bunch of, let's put that aside. She was gone, and the new owner wants to move it to India in the middle of the pandemic, and they're making generic products. So this local union was steel workers, former oil, chemical, atomic workers, progressive, organized. They got Bernie Sanders' crew, Our Revolution, to support them. They appealed to the Biden administration. They appealed to Bernie. They appealed to Manchin. They even suggested to the state government, why don't you buy the company, and then we'll produce generic products for the VA and for Medicaid. Pretty smart, right? Nobody did anything. So 1,500. Probably the best blue-collar jobs other than coal in all of West Virginia, 1,500 jobs, average pay 70 grand, goes under. they could have used the Defense Production Act. They did that with the baby formula just before this period, but they didn't want to do it. And I can't figure out why. This was such an easy way to bring national attention to, we're not going to put up with mass layoffs. It's funny, the president of United Technologies had a great line. When they asked him, well, why did you give in to Trump? He goes, I was born at night, but I wasn't born last night. We get 10% of our revenue comes from federal contracts, right? So there's $760 billion a year in federal contracts. What if you told them, guess what? From here on in, no more mass layoffs, no more stock buybacks. You don't want to do that? Don't take the contract. We'll find somebody else. You can use the bully pulpit. You can use the federal contract. Now, people will say, whoa, wait a second. You're messing with capitalism. It's not going to work. Well, you know what? These large corporations are enormously flexible. The other thing we found, this is another sad one, that Olean plant in upstate New York was Siemens Energy. 90,000 employees was spun off, but still connected to Siemens, which has 400,000 employees, a German-based company. Well, 1,700 U.S. workers lost their jobs when they stopped making a certain kind of compressor for oil rigs or fracking or something. In Germany, 3,000 were going to lose their jobs. But because they have co-determination there, half the board members are workers, including union high-level union officials. They did all these investigations. They did all these pressure tactics. And the company agreed to no compulsory layoffs. Plus, this is the part that was really mind-blowing. In other words, you have to buy the worker out before they'll leave. Otherwise, you can't get rid of them. The six facilities that were making the product that they were shutting down, they agreed to put something else in the plant and keep the six plants open. So that could be part of your federal contract. No compulsory layoffs, no plant shutdowns, no stock buybacks. But you have to interfere with capitalist and Wall Street prerogatives. That takes guts. And I keep asking myself, don't they see that it really works for Sherrod Brown in Ohio? I mean, you know, Bernie in Vermont and Elizabeth Warren in Massachusetts, those are, you know, Democratic states. But Ohio, Brown outpaced Trump by 15% in that 2020. So there, people respond to those who are really trying to protect their jobs. It just has to happen. My big fear is that the right is going to wake up. They're going to see what Trump did. The polling, by the way, after that showed that was enormously popular with the American public and with Democrats for that matter. They're going to wake up and say, you know what? Instead of going after these companies because they're too woke or for diversity, let's go after them because of their layoffs.
You make an interesting point that reminds me of Gaza, actually. I mean, so we have no leverage over Israel unless we stop the arms shipments. That isn't going to happen, so we have no leverage. So the Democrats have no leverage over these large corporations because they won't halt these massive government contracts.
I'm afraid that's what's happened is Schumer's famous line from 2016 has become the de facto policy. He said, for every blue-collar worker we lose in Western Pennsylvania, we're picking up two Republicans in the suburbs. And that goes for Michigan, Ohio, and Wisconsin as well. So that's essentially telling people you're writing them off. There are more suburbanites than there are rural working class people or working class people in general. By the way, it's not just rural. You know, you're talking about Staten Island and Queens and other places, you know, in heavily rural, urban areas. We found no difference, by the way, in people's attitudes, whether they were urban, rural, or suburban amongst the white working class. People feel it's rigged against them and that the Wall Streeters are walking off with the money and the CEOs and that the politicians are too eager to get campaign donations and frankly also have their eye on, maybe get a good Wall Street job after they leave office. And it's now permeated into the political culture. Everybody feels it unless they're really benefiting from it. And that's a very small number of people.
Well, they feel it because it's true.
Perhaps, yes.
It's not a feeling, it's a fact. And so not only do these corporations lavishly fund politicians like Barack Obama or the Clintons, but they take care of them as soon as they leave office. There's payback, speaking fees in the hundreds of thousands of dollars. I mean, it's just legalized bribery.
Again, I keep asking myself, but why do they want to lose? Why would so many Democrats in swing states with large rural populations, working class populations, why do they want to lose? I mean, Sherrod Brown put out three essays with the title Wall Street's War on Workers. Why don't people see that they could actually do something to help working people by stopping these mass layoffs, opposing Wall Street, using that framework? That's what I'm saying. What blew my mind is I believe that that framework was incredibly powerful. It showed up in all the statistical work that we did to sort of prove that it was powerful. Then you get a guy like Mike Lux, the Democratic pollster. He's no radical. He did this report just recently, a year ago, called Factory Towns. And his conclusion is this. He says, the working class wouldn't care that much about the woke thing if the Democrats gave a damn about the economy. Substitute the word mass layoffs for economy, and I think he's exactly right. And now we discover that Sherrod Brown's onto this framework as well. What's holding everybody back?
Well, lest they'd win by a landslide if they actually push through FDR-type, New Deal reforms. But the Democratic leadership as it exists, 80-year-old Biden, Nancy Pelosi, they wouldn't exist because they're creatures of Wall Street. And their power comes from, one, that they're funded by corporations, but even more importantly, they control the flow of campaign or corporate donations to anointed candidates. So I think they'd rather go down in their privileged first-class cabins than become politically irrelevant. Because if there was a pivot where they actually challenged corporate power, the Democratic leadership as it exists presently would be eradicated. I mean, in a fair election, not one saturated with corporate money, Bernie Sanders would have beat Hillary Clinton and probably would have beaten Donald Trump.
I agree. You know, the story in the book that we stumbled on that really saddened me is the story of Mingo County, West Virginia. Can I dive into that one a little bit?
Yeah, sure.
So Bill Clinton wins Mingo County, a small county in West Virginia. Had at the time that Bill Clinton won, it had 3,300 coal jobs. He got 69.7% of the vote, a landslide. Every 4 years thereafter, the Democrat got less and less and less and less. And Biden ends up with 13.9%. That's a pathetic amount, right? So this county has an incredible history. This is where Mother Jones came and spoke during the coal wars of the early 20th century. There was basically a war going on there between the United Mine Workers who was trying to organize and the thugs that were hired by the coal industry. In fact, state and federal troops had to come in there to basically put it under martial law. Finally, with the New Deal and Roosevelt, unions were recognized, United Mine Workers started to prosper, workers started doing better, and they rewarded the Democrats with their votes. So what was going on between 1996 and 2020 in a county that has 23,000 people in it? The coal mining jobs went from 3,300 to 300. So this was the perfect place for the Democrats to do a real work progress administration. Go from town to town, ask people what they need, and then create public jobs to produce what they need. They're going to say, we need better schools. Okay, build new schools. Our roads are falling apart. Build new roads. We don't have internet. Wire them up. We need better healthcare facilities. Produce more healthcare facilities. The strip mining legacy has to be cleaned up. Start, bring Conservation Corps in, clean those places up, get the rivers below are polluted, fix them. There were tens of thousands of jobs to be created in Appalachia, in West Virginia, and thousands that could have been created just in Mingo County. And the Democrats didn't do anything, nor did the Republicans, but we didn't expect them to do anything. So they relied on, what did they rely on? The private sector. What did the private sector do? Too enterprising, but you can't make this up. A guy who just got out of prison being a pimp, set up a drugstore, got some doctor to fill out prescriptions so that he could put out a prescription per minute. And then a second drugstore competed with the first. That's free enterprise, right? You come in, take advantage of the market. This little county became the pill mill of America. That one drugstore was the 22nd largest distributor of opioids in the whole country. You're talking, you know, New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, Houston. No, Mingo County, West Virginia, number 22. You think these people are going to reward the Democrats for creating a few handful of jobs in a drugstore? You know, if I were trying to write a spoof about how to destroy yourself politically, I couldn't have made this up. And then on top of that, Wall Street came in and fed on the carcass of these coal mines that were going under and tried to rip the health benefits away from the coal mining retirees. And that was all legal. UMW, the union fought them very hard, but a lot of coal miners lost their retirement healthcare benefits. We have to stop that. Progressives have to stop. You can't call yourself a progressive and not fight mass layoffs and not fight Wall Street. You just can't. You can't say, oh, this is all okay and the system's going to work itself out by itself. It doesn't. Left to itself, it flows to the bottom, not to the top. It takes human will. Undo that regulation that allows those stock buybacks. Don't let them put debt on a company when they do a leverage buyout, a corporate raid. Don't let them use borrowed money. They have to use their own money. They play it completely differently. And there wouldn't be immediate mass layoffs.
That was Les Leopold, the author of Wall Street's War on Workers, How Mass Layoffs and Greed Are Destroying the Working Class. And what to do about it. Chris Hedges interviewed him on April 5, 2024. You heard a 26-minute excerpt of an extraordinary 54-minute video that I urge you to see online. You can find it under the title, Billionaires Are Pillaging America, How to Fight Back. Chris Hedges is an American journalist, author, commentator, and former war reporter for the New York Times. He writes a weekly column at Shia Post and hosts the program The Chris Hedges Report on the RIA News Network. Please make use of the facts and strategies presented in the full program. They might play a crucial role in the upcoming election. And support Hedges and Leopold's work and the RIA News Network podcasts. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Our email address is tuc@tucradio.org. My name is Maria Gladden. Thank you for listening.